Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program where we're here to talk about important issues today, concluding our current in-depth investigative reporting series on abuses in psychiatry, electroconvulsive therapy, a second opinion. During the previous several programs on electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT, I've tried to lay out what has appeared in the scientific mainstream literature, showing that the two primary reasons to give it, to help prevent suicide and to help with depression, that it works in neither case. It does not sustain in depression with almost 100% relapse within a short period of time. And it actually shows, the scientific study shows, an increase in suicide rather than a decrease or no change at all. The trouble is, to get this, you have to go through a brain injury. Imagine someone coming up to you each day, a doctor, and saying, "We want to help you with your depression." You say, "Well, doc, I'm depressed because my dog died." I understand, but that's really only part of it. You're brain disordered, and we have some terms for it. And if you go to the cookbook on page 27, your particular symptoms you're manifesting are classic of a bipolar phenomena. And here is your solution. We can make that memory simply go away. So you won't be bothered with the memory of your dog dying. You think, well, all right, is it harmful? No. I mean, when we do something that's harmful, is it going to work? Of course it's going to work. How would 100,000 psychiatrists who've done it on millions of people, 100,000 minimum per year, be wrong? We've been doing it for 50 years. Well, that means we've done it on at least 5 million people and probably more. The FDA certainly said nothing about it. The American Psychiatric Association, our official organization, the most prestigious psychiatrist in America, belong to it, say, right on. It's there to help. So remember, we are going to give you something that will work. Person says, fine. They go in. There would have been a time when they would have realized that all of us, through various passages in our life, go through a grieving. And it's important we have a chance to grieve. And each person grieves in a different way. Some very openly and some very quietly. Some busy themselves that they really don't feel they're grieving. And others immerse themselves in it. But in almost all cases, there is a reemergence where we have brought closure, where we have finally let what we were grieving for, we let it go and realize we have to face this day. Or there were times when we had the counsel of those who loved us and cared for us, who were sympathetic to our plight and would listen with compassion and empathy, and they would hear us in the way that we needed to be heard, that we were suffering, and they appreciated that we were sharing that with them. And then those who were professionals, psychotherapists and psychologists, analysts, psychiatrists, ministers, rabbis, nuns, think of all the people in your life who you've sought comfort from your suffering. And there it was, trying to reflect upon, what did you learn from this? How can you grow from this? How can this pain that seems so unbearable be a way of allowing you to be stronger in the next passage of your life? That passage is closed. And most depression comes from some form of loss. Loss of control, loss of a relationship, loss of aging, loss of self-esteem, loss of vitality, loss of our capacity to control more in our life, sense of helplessness as things kind of wander out of our control, and we go through melancholy, apathy, and we call it depression. Almost everything today that is not a happy mood can be called depression, and any kind of giddiness can be called a hyper-anxiety. So almost every single behavior today has been pathologized. Hence, there is really no normal. In fact, the only normal is to be chemically lobotomized, where a kid goes to school and is creative, inquisitive, or bored. And we call that a mental disorder. And now mental disorders means they're diseased. Something's wrong with their brains. And of course, we know what will put it right: drugs, shock, or treatment. So it doesn't take long before you start to realizing that a very curious mind is almost always going to be labeled as a diseased mind. So where does that leave anyone to go with the uniqueness of their personality? Today we almost feel relief if we have sidestepped being categorized or classified as a disease. And then we have a whole culture out there today that prides itself on never having to worry about anything because it can walk around all day with all of its tasks being done under the influence of tranquilizers. Tranquilizers for everything. As if everything in life is too difficult to face on our own. And those who don't want the tranquilizers frequently will lose themselves in some mind-numbing sublimation, drugs, alcohol. No one takes alcohol to feel good about themselves. No one takes a drug because they love themselves. They're taking these medications, drugs, or alcohol, pharmaceutical or bioactive ingredients, because they want to feel different. And different frequently means not feeling pain. Pain from things that in that moment they just feel overwhelmed to deal with. They no longer feel they can adjust or adapt to the circumstances in their life. So they seek a way out. And one of the way outs is through something in the form of a medication or a recreational stimulant. So psychiatrists have no shortages of people that they can then classify and treat. So now the psychiatrist comes up to you and says, we're going to get rid of your depression from any of these causes. And you say, fine. And they take out a baseball bat and they say, now bend over and just look at the bat. And you only feel it for just a second as we swing and hit you in the head. Now, Dr. Such and Such from Harvard wants to hit you on both sides of the head simultaneously. You go boom, boom. But then we may do a unilateral and hit you front and back, bilateral. Or we may just hit you on top, but one way or the other, we have to create. And you're saying, well, "What are you? I'm not. What are you doing? We're going to have to create some brain damage. My brain's not damaged now. I know it's not damaged, but it's diseased. You have depression, and we have to. Our remedy is to create brain damage. Well, how will that help me? Well, you'll forget what you're depressed about. Well, by extension, if my foot ached, would you cut it off? And they look and they smile and they say, now that's not a bad idea. Why didn't we think of that? How much would it cost to cut off someone's foot? And you think, well, what if my other foot then started to eat? Well, we cut that off. You see, we could cut out half your brain, both of your eyes, your entire tongue, both breasts, one kidney, half your liver. We could cut off both arms, both legs, your genitals, and you could still be alive and conscious. How about that? It's great to be a doctor today. And you think, well, okay. I mean, if no one's complaining, my rabbi's not complaining, my priest, nobody complains, Pope, nobody complains. So you must be right. Because if you were wrong, I'm sure someone would be concerned enough that they would protest. Ted Koppel, he hasn't complained. My God, Walter Cronkite hasn't complained. So if nobody we respect complains, then I got to accept that maybe this is what we should do. And they said, you're correct. We are authorities. We are psychiatrists. We are doctors. We're scientists. It's medical science. We have the FDA and USDA. We have everybody on our side. We're certified prime rib. Correct. Bend over. Look up. Whack. Later that day, who am I? Where am I? I've got a splitting headache. Take these pills. Where am I at? You're in a hospital. Why are you here? You're here because you had depression. What's depression? Well, you don't have it anymore. Will that ever come back? Yes. When? Well, maybe later today. Generally, almost always within a few months, 6 months. Will I forget anything? You could forget whole parts of your life. What did you do before you came in here, before we created brain damage? I was an accountant. Do you have a family? I don't remember. Well, the record says that, yes, you were accountant for 17 years. You graduated from Wharton School in Pennsylvania. And you make $125,000 a year, and you live in this suburban community of Somerville, New Jersey, and you have three children. I do? Yes. Why don't I remember them? Well, that's part of the benefit of the therapy. Remember? No, I don't. I don't know why I'm here. You're here because, like a lot of Americans, especially baby boomers, you just didn't want to face anything, honestly, and slow down and you just got so distracted in thinking that somehow if you just did more of everything, you'd feel better. And of course it didn't. So we've taken upon ourselves to give you a really good therapy. Now, you're not going to remember things, so you should feel good about yourself. Well, wouldn't I become depressed for the fact that I've forgotten I had a family? How can I feel good about going home and looking at strangers and not knowing who they are, not knowing what to share with them, not knowing what I have shared with them? That's immaterial. Absolutely immaterial. The important thing is we got rid of the symptoms. Yeah, but I'm going to be depressed all over again. What if I can get so depressed I'm going to commit suicide? Not to worry. We're going to have you on maintenance therapy. Every time you start to remember that you're depressed about something else, we'll destroy even more brain cells. Well, how many times are you going to hit me in the head? Paul Henry Thomas, we hit 60 times and still wasn't enough to make him feel good about accepting his therapy. And in fact, one of us, the psychiatrist, said that because he didn't recognize that he was mentally ill, that's a sign of mental illness. And because he wanted to go home, that's a sign of mental illness. Well, hold on. He's African. No, he's not African American. He's Haitian and an activist. I do remember one thing before he hit me in the head. I remember that if an African American wanted no longer to be a slave and wanted freedom, they were assigned by the psychiatrist a diagnosis of suffering from nigritude, the desire to run away, which meant that they were crazy because they weren't capable of a normal life because they were infantiles. Are you suggesting that everybody who doesn't want your therapy is mentally ill because they can't recognize their mental illness? That's correct. And if we're in a mental institution and we want to get out, that means it's just reaffirming our insanity? Yes. I see. So in other words, as long as we stay in here and don't complain, we're considered improving. You've read the book. You're a good patient. All right. Now, they don't use a baseball bat. And it's too bad, because if everyone who's ever received electroconvulsive therapy had a baseball bat hitting them in the head, and by the way, electroconvulsive therapy per square inch is a 60-pound weight hitting you from 1 foot up, then you would not have had permanent memory loss. But you do have brain damage, and the brain damage is more severe with electrical current running through your brain than being hit by a baseball bat. Let me go to the scientific literature. Here is the part they have not shared with you. And all these are quotes from peer-reviewed journals. Let's talk about brain changes during electroconvulsive therapy. All these are direct quotes, and I'll give you the citations. The electricity passing through the brain causes massive simultaneous excitation of vast numbers of neurons. Neurons, by the way, are brain cells. The inhibitory mechanisms that normally hold neurons in check are overwhelmed by the excitation, meaning the electrocution. As the excitation, meaning electrocution, builds and swamps the inhibitory mechanism, it spreads throughout the brain. When the excitation reaches the momentums, the motor neurons of all the body, there is a massive convulsive muscular contraction. The muscles contract so powerfully that tendons may be torn from the bones. The bones broken, teeth chipped and broken, and the neck snapped. The massive requirements for oxygen and the interruption of breathing causes this exposure resembles a grand mal seizure that occurs in epilepsy, unquote. Accompanying the convulsion, there is a tremendous rise in blood pressure, changes in arterial pressure from 80 mm to 220 mm, or almost a 200% increase in blood pressure has been recorded. That's Dr. Peter Sterling, Associate Professor of Neurobiology, Department of Anatomy, School of Medicine, University of Pennsylvania. Archives of Neurology, Volume 18, page 1 through 13. Quote, with the onset of the seizure, cerebral blood flow rises dramatically, as much as 400%. Cerebral oxygen consumption also rises by as much as 400%. In accomplishing such massive increases in blood flow, the autonomic mechanisms that normally regulate cerebral blood flow are overwhelmed. These changes accompanying electroconvulsive therapy are not modified by the administration of anesthetic, paralytic drugs, or oxygen, unquote. Dr. Plumman Posner and Troy, in an article with cerebral metabolic and circulatory responses to induced convulsions, Archives of Neurology, Volume 18. The extremely high cerebral blood pressure and the breakdown in autoregulation of cerebral blood flow during the seizure frequently rupture small, occasionally large vessels in the brain, unquote. As from Madlow, reviewing 42 cases of autopsies and on 26 published reports of patients who died during electroconvulsive therapy or shortly thereafter. 25, which was 60%, had either petechial hemorrhages or large infarcts in the brain. And that comes from the American Journal of Psychiatry, Volume 113, page 337. Isn't it interesting? They're calling it safe, and they have all these people dying from hemorrhaging from the electroconvulsive therapy. Quote, there seems every reason to suspect that subarachnoid or intercerebral bleeding accompanies electroconvulsive therapy half the time. This is supported by numerous studies in animal autopsies after being subjected to electroconvulsive therapy. For example, Dr. Albers and Hughes found bleeding in 23 of 30 casts, 77%. Halbrun found petechial or large hemorrhages in all the rats that convulsed in his experiments to electroconvulsive therapy. Weil made similar findings in 81% of rabbits. Wherever bleeding occurs in the brain, neurons lose their supply of oxygen and nutrients and die, unquote. That's according to the Archives of Neurology and Psychiatry, Volume 47, page 918. The electric shock causes damage to the blood-brain barrier. This has been shown experimentally in animals, and there is every reason to believe that it happens in humans as well. Whatever the cause, the loss of this protective barrier exposes the brain tissue to components of the blood it normally is protected from, unquote. Journal of Nervous and Metabolic Disease, Volume 140. The combination of raised cerebral blood pressure and ruptured blood-brain barrier often causes another problem, cerebral edema, that means swelling of the brain. As pressure inside the skull rises from the swelling, capillaries are closed. Their linings are damaged by anoxia, making them even more leaky. This leads to more edema and damage, unquote. That's in Brain Edema, New England Journal of Medicine, Volume 293, page 706. Edema has been noted in the human retina, an easily visible part of the brain, as a consequence of shock therapy, by Winnick, Landau, Assol, Tommen, in an article entitled Microvascular Changes During Insulin Coma Treatment, Another Form of Shock Therapy, published in Biological Treatment of Mental Illness. Even if the brain receives enough oxygen during a seizure, the brain may exhaust its sources of nutrients and be irreversibly damaged. Let me repeat that. Irreversibly damaged. It means that the abolition of electrical activity and the coma that sometimes follows a seizure can occur even though adequate oxygen is available, unquote. There are changes in a host of brain chemicals as a result of electroconvulsive therapy. Synthesis of protein and RNA are inhibited within 5 minutes of electroconvulsive therapy, with the decrease persisting for a number of hours. the levels of neural transmitters, acetylcholine, norepinephrine, serotonin, and their related enzymes are also changed, unquote. Neurochemistry of cerebroelectric shock. Following electroconvulsive therapy, there is a marked rise in cerebral levels of arachidonic acid. This compound has been shown to cause aggregation of blood platelets, that means clumping, when injected into the cerebral blood supply, resulting in small strokes throughout the brain. Conceivably, the rise in arachidonic acid associated with electroconvulsive therapy could be a source of brain damage, unquote. Dr. Zeisman, Bazin, in Biochemical Biophysiology Archives, Volume 218. Also published in the Journal of Neurochemistry, Volume 18. Now, that's just some of the direct changes, and mind you, that's not all. Time does not permit me to cite all the articles I have, but that's just brain changes. Now, keep in mind that you never hear any psychiatrist or any public health official telling the people about to receive electroconvulsive therapy of just those single changes I mentioned. Many strokes, rupturing of blood vessels, coma, edema, convulsions, death, major infarct, all of that can occur in any individual receiving electroconvulsive therapy, and much of that can actually occurs in most people. Let's go over to the phones at this time. I'd like to bring on one individual who's gone through electroconvulsive therapy, Lenore Berry. Nice to have you with us today, Lenore.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to listen to all that. I can't believe that that happened to me and that I was taken into the back room 22 times. And it really makes me angry, you know. I mean, it makes me so angry that I don't want to think about it.
Well, something we have to think about, because the only way we're going to get anything changed is to talk about it.
Yeah, it still affects me today. I mean, just thinking that all, like, they give you this drug so that you won't have convulsions, you know, so that all that shows are your toes wiggling. You know that?
Yes.
And so that instead of these horrible convulsions, because people were breaking limbs and everything, they give you this drug now so that only your feet, your toes are quivering, and I think that's even more horrible. It is so horrible. And they're still doing it. A friend of mine went in that last winter and was very upset because he had an internet radio station and he just couldn't get anybody to support him, and he had gotten to the point where he was very depressed about it, and since he was living in this place and trying to have this radio station and nobody would support him, and he started playing the blame game and blaming everybody, he moved out of there. He had nowhere to go, and he was staying with me, and I live in just one room. So I told him he couldn't stay with me, and he called me up from an institution down the street and said they were recommending shock treatments. He talked to a doctor for an hour, and they were recommending shock treatments to him. And I told him that, you know, if he accepted this rape, that they were going to rape him completely of his brain and everything, that I would never speak to him again and for him never to call me again. And he said, you know, you're not very supportive, and he hung up on me. But he didn't understand that I was being very supportive of him, and he didn't understand that they had no right to tell him that he needed shock treatment because he was depressed about his life. And, you know, I think that the cause, that why do these people do all these things that you're talking about, you know, why do they do it? It has to come from the fact that how they feel about consciousness. I think that they think that consciousness is a product of the brain and not the other way around. And that's where they get all their conclusions from. That's why they try to damage you. I think that, you know, that just being an individual in this society today is criminal. It's criminalized. And it's systemic all throughout the society. When someone starts displaying individuality, they're automatically labeled and diagnosed. And shock treatment is about the worst thing. It's like you said, people will commit suicide after they've gotten shock. I think Hemingway did. I think Sylvia Plath did.
I have the list of over 200 famous artists, writers, poets, creative people who are, contrary to one of the people in this audience who heard me giving some praise to artists, of course, in a knee-jerk reaction, says, well, I don't think artists are so special. What's that mean for the rest of us? Well, everyone has something special about them. But historically, the artists have had the most difficulty fitting in within a normal way of living because they're not normal. They weren't meant to be normal. They weren't meant to fit in like everyone else. They have absolute gifts that we must appreciate. And to do that, we have to set aside the way we judge and evaluate people, because they're not going to go to bed at 10 o'clock at night and wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they're not going to eat on time, and they're not going to do anything by anyone's rules. That's not what they were meant to do. But also, the average person is not at the head of a march, willing to sacrifice anything to bring a higher sense of integrity. A lot of people can be highly critical sitting on the sidelines of people who have sacrificed so much. And it's always easy to throw out something against the artist. And I will defend the artist, because without the artist, we have no soul in this society. They are the soul keepers. Others can work and facilitate and help on so many levels and do the details. But the artist is always going to be more susceptible to being diagnosed as manic or depressed or schizophrenic. In fact, most artists, if you had them talk about what goes on in their mind, you can bet they would be labeled as schizophrenic, which I don't believe exists anyhow. So we've never made room for the uniqueness of individual perceptions of reality in our society. We want one size fits all. If you don't fit in with this, then there's something wrong with you, and then you're going to get shocked or drugged. And a lot of artists besides Hemingway. Hemingway committed suicide within 2 weeks after getting his second electroconvulsive therapy, because he told his friend, he said, they have taken away my currency, meaning his capacity to remember the experiences of his life, which allowed him to write The Movable Feast and Snow's Kilimanjaro and so many other great books.
Oh, yeah, it completely wipes out all of your creativity. And I just wonder why a doctor, as someone who's supposed to be a doctor, these are actually vivisectionists and chemists, but when you go in and you say, I'm suicidal, you know, okay, well, you're plotting a murder, your own. You go in and tell a doctor you're sabotaging your own murder. And why do they see that as something that needs to be, why do you need to be punished for it? In the institutions, they use shock treatment as a form of control. If people have too many outbursts, they will schedule shock treatments. And so you learn really quickly to be really, really, you learn how to not have outbursts, you know, to keep all your rage and everything inside of you. Because if you are in there and you tell somebody you're suicidal or you have outbursts, they will schedule shock treatments. And they use it all the time as a form of control, and it's really horrible. It should be banned, and I don't know when it's going to be banned. I guess we're very far away from that, right?
The only time it will be banned is when every legislature, every state's attorney general, every physician, every school teacher, every psychologist is given at least 10 rounds of electroconvulsive therapy.
Oh, what about the consumers who make use of these consumers who go in and make use of these psychiatrists and psychologists, these vivisectionists? I mean, as long as people are validating this as something that we need, then it's going to continue, right? As long as people,
Lenore, it's not just going to continue, but we cannot separate out issues. The same person willing to go unquestionably to the authority figure of a psychiatrist and do something they have not done their homework on, refused to see all alternatives to is the same person who would go in and take Prozac or give their kid Ritalin. Mm-hmm. I feel that it's child abuse to give a child Ritalin.
It is.
There is no such condition that I can find that justifies a diagnosis of attention deficit disorder. It does not exist.
No, it doesn't exist.
Schizophrenia doesn't exist. ADHD do not exist. Mm-mm. And there's no legitimacy within psychiatry. It is a pathetic excuse of a irrational approach to trying to quantify human behavior into a simple, reducible, Newtonian, Descartesian analog of what is wrong with society so it can be scripted.
Mm-hmm.
It does not work, and yet we've accepted it as if it did.
But they're in control, right? They're the ones that are controlling it. And once you get into that system, once you go in there and say, you know, do something with me, I'm going to kill myself, that's their excuse. That if they're going, this is the last resort. We don't want this person to kill themselves. Why?
Well, then they help you. 1 in 200 die from electrical therapy, so it's a legal form of euthanasia.
It is illegal for you to go, to say that you want to commit suicide. Why?
It's just the way that we perceive our lives. We have lost the ability to want to deal with our issues in a constructive way. We have become the overly feel-good society. And how do you feel good? You go to euphoric. How do you stay euphoric? Get doped. How do you get doped? The doctor is the biggest pusher. You get 5 times more drugs, illegal drugs, being prescribed to alter perception than you do illegal street drugs.
But when you go into an institution and you're euphoric, they bring you down.
Well, they'll bring you down, but they'll also put you into a sense of shock, which can create a sense of giddiness and a temporary euphoria. And then they say that, look at the euphoria. They're happy. They're giggling. They're smiling. Well, yes, and I saw a guy who was laughing when his heart was knocked out of his chest. Mm-hmm. A buddy of mine who walked out in the street, and boom, I turned around, and he was sitting about 35 feet down, and a car had gone up and screeched to a halt, and I ran up, and I looked in his eyes, and he was smiling.
Wow.
And his heart was in his hands.
Oh, wow.
It had knocked it out of his chest. And how can you tell someone in that moment you're going to be dead in about a minute, minute and a half? But he was in shock, and he was euphoric. All you have to do is see the consequences of shock and euphoria, and then the psychiatrist will use that euphoria that they've created by creating a grand mal seizure with permanent brain damage in so many people as, look, we actually helped the person. So you see, we have no one judging these judges. We have legislators, by and large, are so compliant to the special interest groups that look at the history. It's a farce. It's a facade. It's pathetic that we cannot get anything done that really makes a measurable change in what's wrong with us. And are physicians going to complain about psychiatrists? No. Are psychiatrists going to complain about psychiatrists? Rarely. What about the half the psychiatrists that don't support electric compulsive therapy? Has there been a march, a demonstration? Has there been a major protest, an outrage? None.
Well, there's another point. They've got these statistics on, well, we've helped, these people are saying that they're not depressed anymore because we've given them these shock treatments, and they're saying that they're fine. Well, once you've been given shock treatments, you damn well better tell them you're fine. You damn well better tell them that you're not depressed anymore, or they'll shock you again. You know, so how can their statistics be right if people are so scared to say, yeah, I'm depressed. Of course, I get depressed every day. They're not going to tell them that once they've experienced the horror of shock, right?
Well, look at it, yes, and look at it from an opposite point of view. The most common form of psychological torture to erase the dissident's mind was electroconvulsive therapy for over 50 years in the Soviet Union, even under Brezhnev.
Oh, and, really?
And under Brzezinski, and under all these people that we thought were so Western-leaning. And yet if we took someone and said, you are a political dissident, and we're going to shock your brain until you have no memory of what you're protesting, the world would be outraged and say that is a form of torture. But when it is done in Russia, we did not protest, and when it's done here as a therapeutic model, we did not protest. But the results are the same.
And then Paul Henry Thomas, right? They're doing that to him.
Paul Henry Thomas is a political prisoner being held in one of the most despicable institutions in America, which should be closed down, this Pilgrim State Hospital.
Oh,
it is worse than a whorehouse because it doesn't just capture the person, it violates every decency and sanctity, and yet they will hide behind an utterly corrupt office of mental health in this state that is one of the most vile institutions, utterly, utterly politicized from beginning to end. You can't get an honest word out of that office of mental health, and yet the governor, no one seems capable of going in there and cleaning it up because the public has not demanded it. We will only do what the public demands, and thus far, with only rare exception, the Village Voice, one reported for the New York Post, and these programs here on this station have led the cause to raise more people's consciousness, but the average person...
Are they still shocking him then?
We've got to stay.
Oh, man.
The judge should be shocked because I've never seen anything that parallels when they say the judge allowed this. Can you imagine? Can you imagine being in front of this judge for anything if he lacks such reason? That he says if he doesn't recognize he's mentally ill, then he must continue receiving a shock.
Oh, God, that's so horrible. What a witch hunt, man.
Well, you put him in an impossible situation. If Paul Henry Thomas says, you really helped me with the electroconvulsive therapy, I'm so glad I've got it.
Right, he's got to say that.
Then they might lessen the amount they give him.
Yep.
If he continues to praise the psychiatrist for hurting him, they may lessen up on the beating.
Yeah, but it's really hard to be smart when they're doing that to you, you know. You don't know how to be deceptive when you don't have a brain left to think with. You know, it's only after a period of time that I became wise and knew how to handle myself. Once I had periods that they would call mania, but I'm a creative artist, and then I would go in and I would know how to handle myself because I had recovered from after years and years after having shock. Then I had recovered and gone in a manic state, but I knew what not to say. But he has no way to do that now. So, you know, they'll probably end up killing him.
Every single artist I've ever met in my life, no matter what the field of art, has what psychiatry would call a mania.
Right.
It is not. It is a divine inspiration.
An altered state of self-confidence.
That is correct.
They don't like it.
And if you
it's illegal.
If you tame it, you've destroyed what was uniquely artistic. So
that's
artists
right.
Cannot be judged by the normal standards, and if people's ego don't like that, well, then they should examine their own insufficiency of self-confidence. But look at the world if we didn't have artists.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have any color? No. Any drama, plays, movies, poetry, books? No. And not everyone can do this. You know, we'd like to be politically correct and say we're all equal. We're not.
No, of course
We're uniquely different.
Right.
And some people... Nobody can do what they can do at making a shoe, or someone else in riding a bus, and someone else of planting, rows of cabbage, and someone else of teaching a class. We should gravitate toward what is normal within us and natural within our feelings, instead of being conditioned to believe that we have to curtail or eliminate anything that would disappoint our caregivers, that we wouldn't be following in their footsteps or what they feel is best for us. And how many decisions have we made in life that we ended up saying, gee whiz, these were not really my decisions. I made them for other people.
Right.
And then when we try to be ourselves, people say, well, your behavior's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
You bet my behavior's not normal. There's nothing about me that's normal. I'll tell you, if I ever get normal, please shock me.
All right?
It's the only thing that would help me. I wouldn't want the pain of being normal. I have nothing that's normal about me, and I pride myself on not being normal. Do you think I could be honest if I was normal? Do you hear anybody else who's normal who's honest? No. God,
right.
no journalist in America who's mainstream journalist ever found a conspiracy in the Kennedy Assassination. I mean, that's a simple little thing. No, we have to take it to the point. See, people don't realize that I was sculpting and painting and fashion designing in poetry, long before I got into health and nutrition.
Well, how did you escape diagnosis then?
Because I've never, ever in my life accepted that someone else has a right to make a choice over what is essential to my well-being.
Well, I know, but you don't always have the option. I mean, it's pretty much forced on you.
Well, and you can remove yourself as much as humanly possible. It's just that I've always grown up believing that we can get out of a circumstance as long as we don't first try to engage it. It's when you engage it, you get stuck. It's like the way they catch the lemurs in Madagascar is they put little bowls of nuts out and with small little entrances, and they'll reach in, grab the nuts, and then they walk over, and they don't want to let go of the nuts to escape. So they get caught. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is, in our desperation, we go to the very people who have helped misdefine our problem and look for a treatment. It's like going to the doctor, and doctor says, if you want to be well and live a long life, you must eat these four food groups. And you say, well, doctor, if I eat those four food groups, I'm going to end up with the very diseases that you're going to say are unrelated to them, and then treat me in ways that are inappropriate.
Right.
So you've created a disease that now you're going to misappropriately treat. So both ways, you've compounded my problem. Instead of saying, I'll eat the way that I feel is more natural to my body, and I will look at cause and effect. When I eat this way, I feel this way and look this way. When I eat your way, I look this way and I feel this way. Mm-hmm. Now, if I get overweight and get my arteries clogged and have high blood pressure and diabetes and arthritis and congestive heart failure, and I go to you, you're going to give me drugs that are only going to be palliative to the symptoms, nothing to the cure. And then when I don't agree with you, you're going to say that I'm a highly volatile personality, and therefore I'm a disease, which you will then give me your colleagues who will then try to medicate me. If that doesn't work, they'll shock me. If that didn't work, they'll restrain and shock me. If that didn't work, they'll lobotomize me. You have no limit to the tools of torture that you're willing to subject people to, all in the name of science. Well, it has nothing to do with science, and science in itself should never be the final arbiter of what is normal. Because science does not define the human spirit, is not even a concept of it, life force, life energy, and the potential of the human mind, since science has never defined the mind because it's never found it, doesn't understand it, only has found the brain and still can't define it, except out of neurological synthesis.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
How you feeling, Lenore?
Oh, I feel all right. You're kind of funny.
I grew up in a house with a bunch of guys, all my brothers. They're all clowns. And what we couldn't cope with, we laughed at. You know, and you, at some point in life, you just got to laugh at how stupid things and people can be. And we all make mistakes. We got to, at some point, we have to lighten ourselves up to appreciate our own life comedies. Lenore, you've made a big step in your own life, and you're out there trying to help others. If you want to help people in this audience, you could certainly refer them to a place where they might go to get additional input and help. Can you do that?
Sure.
And where would that be?
I didn't understand your question.
Oh, in other words, a web page or a resource group?
My web page. I would go to my web page, LenoreBerry.com, but I would also check out ECT.org.
ECT.org.
Right.
Okay. Was nice to have you on.
Thank you, Gary.
Okay.
And I would also refer them to your webpage.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Lenore Berry. And I wanted to have her on just so you see that when medicine parades out its poster people to say, hey, I went through electroconvulsive therapy. My name's Timmy. My name's Linda. And I feel good about myself today. Well, there are a whole lot of people who don't. One of my lawyers, who's a very kind and gentle and thoughtful human being, his son was depressed. And instead of taking the alternative position, which is rather ironic because he would have taken the alternative position, the father, the son got on Prozac. And I remember I did a show on Prozac, and after he wrote me a letter saying, but Gary, my son was really benefited by Prozac, and it really helped him. Of course, he's still on Prozac, and his life's not changed. It just is the highs and those extreme lows have been modified. Well, that is a temporary solution to the excesses of a symptom. It does not change what caused the feelings in the first place. And there are natural non-toxic approaches to that very same depression. But if we don't have confidence in that because it lies outside of the authority figures that we're used to, we're not going to use it. You have no idea what it's like to sit across some parents, as I did 2 days ago, who have a terminally ill daughter, and the daughter's there, And you look and you don't see the terminal illness. Person looks okay from the outside, but they've got massive cancer metastasized to the brain, the spine, liver, breast. And the doctors have given up. There's nothing they can do. And they've given her anywhere from 2 to 3 months to live. And she's only 26 years old. And when I'm laying out what they may consider in the way of complementary approaches, I keep hearing the father say, I don't know, my doctor's not going to go for that. And every single thing I suggested, even with studies, I finally put a hold on it, and I went over and I pulled out a file and I started giving them all these peer-reviewed scientific studies. And I say, now here, if we mention that this would help, here's the study showing it helps. Now, this is a peer-reviewed journal. This is the same journal that this doctor you say would oppose it. This is the same journal this doctor reads. So it's not as if I'm asking you to consider something that's off the back of the milk wagon. This is legitimate. I don't know. I mean, it's all kind of, you know, it's too strange. Too strange. I keep looking in the daughter's eyes, and I keep looking for something that she's saying with her eyes, because she clearly wasn't saying it verbally. So I finally asked us, could I just speak with your daughter alone? Well, that was a whole resistive issue. So finally, I had a moment with the daughter, and I said, can you make the choice for yourself? She looked down, and she said, no. I said, will you try some things? Just try them. You have nothing to lose. And she just kept looking down the floor, and she said, no. And I can't force a person to do something. If they're hanging over the side of the abyss and death is below them and I reach over, I say, grab my hand. Grab it. We can pull you out. And they don't. And you say, just give me a finger. Give me anything to hold on to. And watch the good that can happen. And you realize that people's conditioning is so strong. And so I knew that they would not do anything. And she will die in the time period that the doctor suggested. She won't want to miss her death day because she'll disappoint them and she won't challenge her mother and father. The mother was quiet, never opened her mouth. The father, a dominant character. And then you have to wonder how much damage done to this person's psyche was due to this highly dominant, very negative, very anal person who in all, for all intents and purposes, probably thought everything he was doing was all for the love and best for his daughter. How many times do we do things with good intent but end up with wrong results? And so it's even doubly difficult, just like it was for my lawyer's son, who does not have the doctors around them who are going to even look at an alternative point of view. Don't believe in it. Don't trust it. Won't try it. Don't want it. People would rather die or suffer at the hands of orthodoxy than to in any way alienate the orthodox superior figures in their life by trying something they wouldn't agree with. So honor your doctor and get worse or die, but don't get well or cure yourself using some other alternative approach or doctor's approach. That's what it comes down to the majority of people. So I can certainly appreciate what's going on in a lot of people who are struggling, and the struggles just don't seem to make a difference. Let me just conclude in the next several minutes this particular program on electroconvulsive therapy, and this will complete it up to this point. As new information becomes available, as additional research is made available to me, I will certainly continue this series in the future. I would like to show you now the changes in the EEG, the electrocephalograph. I'll quote all these, again, from peer-reviewed journals such as the Journal of Nervous and Metabolic Disease, volume 107, page 517. The EEG changes markedly during the following ECT of 42 patients with normal EEGs before electroconvulsive therapy. Half had abnormal EEGs following treatment. One-third of these abnormalities were severe, quote, cerebral dysarrhythmias, unquote. The EEG patterns resembled those commonly seen in epileptic patients in the periods between epileptic seizures, unquote. Another one, the frequency of damage increased with increasing number of shocks. After 42 shocks, half the patients showed cerebral edema and cerebral dysfunction. These changes were often extremely long-lasting. Thus, 68 of 82 patients showed this condition following their electroconvulsive therapy 10 months later. And for all anyone knows, the changes were permanent, unquote. Another one, these findings have been confirmed in modern studies using anesthesia, oxygen, and muscle paralysis, unquote. That's Neurophysiology, Volume 32. General Archives of General Psychiatry, Volume 27. And as far as they claim, ECT is humane? Read the International Journal of Risk and Safety in Medicine, Volume 11. I'll quote it. ECT was originated in Italy in 1938 by Benny and Sorelli, who observed the effects of electrical current in rendering slaughterhouse pigs into a state of unconsciousness. That the electrical shocks did not actually kill the pigs led the doctors to try it on human beings. The first human subject understandably feared that he was indeed about to be slaughtered. When the first shock did not render him unconscious, he beseeched his doctors, "Not again, it's murderous." Cerletti himself translated the victim's plea as, "Not another one, it's deadly," unquote. Doctors frequently respond to complaints about electroconvulsive therapy treatment by deciding that the patient is in need of more treatment. Increased exposure to the brain-damaging effects of electroconvulsive therapy can almost always be relied upon to eventually put an end to the patient's protest, unquote. They say it's efficacious, I say it's not. Let's see what the literature says. There is no conclusive evidence that electroconvulsive therapy is better than antidepressant treatment, unquote. And that's from the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry, Volume 49, page 3. Quote, a review of controlled studies of electroconvulsive therapy efficacy found that both electroconvulsive therapy and sham, meaning a placebo electroconvulsive therapy that had no electrical current, were associated with, quote, substantial improvements and that there was little or no difference between the two. The authors conclude, quote, whether electrically induced convulsions exert therapeutic effects in certain types of depression that cannot be achieved by other means has yet to be clearly established, unquote. And that was in the Annals of the New York Academy of Science, Volume 462, page 12. At the consensus conference of electroconvulsive therapy, advocates were unable to come forth with a single controlled study showing that electroconvulsive therapy had a positive effect beyond 4 weeks. Many studies showed no effect, and in the positive studies, the improvements were not dramatic, unquote. That's according to the Journal of the American Medical Association, Volume 245. And then there's adverse psychological effects. Quote, 20 people who reported having found electroconvulsive therapy upsetting were interviewed about their experiences in detail. A variety of themes emerged, including feelings of fear, shame and humiliation, worthlessness and helplessness, and a sense of having been abused and assaulted. This had reinforced existing problems and led to distrust of psychiatric staff. Few had felt able to tell professionals of the strength of their reactions, implying a possible hidden pool of trauma, unquote. And that's according to Dr. Johnson in the Journal of Mental Health, Volume 8. Quote, doctors who give electroconvulsive therapy have shown remarkably little interest in their patients' views of the procedure and its effect on them, and only recently had this topic received any consideration in the literature, unquote. That was on the Journal of Mental Health, article by Abrams. What is never discussed in the ledger is the profoundly damaging psychological effects of electroconvulsive therapy, unquote. And that is cited in the First Principles to Professional Practice. On mental health, conscious attitudes towards electroconvulsive therapy are time and again in long-term therapy succeeding by feelings that it was cruel and destructive. There is a, quote, revival of threatening and punitive parental figures who are often like the physician, initially created with good intentions, unquote. This Journal of Nervous and Mental Diseases, volume 123, page 32. The procedure may evoke unconscious meaning in both doctor and patient. It has all the characteristics of an overwhelming assault, and this can be documented by the reactions of some patients who have had this treatment, unquote. In a study of the conscious and unconscious attitudes towards electroconvulsive therapy in 30 psychotic patients, the authors conclude that, quote, the majority of patients found electric shock to be a traumatic experience, unquote. Psychological reactions to electroconvulsive therapy often compound patients' difficulties and defenses. For example, obsessional people might need to become even more controlled, unquote. Interviews with 10 women admitted to a state hospital in California and their relatives revealed a uniform confusion and bewilderment at the loss of memory in everyday life. Sometimes their forgetfulness, for example, of previous hostile outbursts was welcome to their husbands. Fear of future electroconvulsive therapy stopped some women from confiding emotional upsets, and family relationships were subtly altered on their all levels. Most people who have had electroconvulsive therapy are profoundly ignorant about the whole procedure and say that they were given no or inadequate explanations, unquote. That's according to Dr. John Stone on the adverse psychological effects of electroconvulsive therapy in the Journal of Mental Health, February 1999. 69% did not know that electroconvulsive therapy involved convulsion. The Royal Society of Medicine, volume 74, page 283. Only 21% said they were given a good explanation of what it was they were receiving, unquote. In one survey by an organization of former electroconvulsive therapy recipients, 35% of the respondents described it as damaging. 16% said it was not helpful. And finally, interviews with 516 psychiatric patients revealed a large minority who said electroconvulsive therapy was unhelpful, with a high proportion of the latter group strongly condemning it. They had nightmares, flashbacks, and trauma. So, and that is not all of it by any means. That's only part. Time does not permit an more in-depth analysis. I hope you've at least had an insight into what up to this point has been an extraordinarily one-sided pro-advocate electroconvulsive therapy that all the major newspapers, magazines, medical organizations have supported it. And they say they do this because the science of safety and efficacy is on their sides. I've tried to show you that they have no efficacy or safety on their side. The actual literature to which they should be subscribing shows they should not be doing it all. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you very much for listening. As we continue, Abuses in Psychiatry, Electroconvulsive Therapy.